Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Dr. Joe Dodaro, and he is someone that I actually got connected with on the power of Instagram. But just had been quickly blown away by some of his content, his passion on certainly on this topic of sleep, and then how that aligns with this conversation on this podcast will be around traumatic brain injury. And that if you're hearing that and say, oh, well, that's not me, one of the things that he presents us to is how that can even be kind of categorized as times when, you know, maybe you had a little whiplash, you hit your head in some particular way. It doesn't have to look, you know, with that trauma part, that traumatic word within there. It doesn't have to necessarily be an extreme event. It could be something that just sort of happened throughout your life and then you kind of coded it as uneventful or maybe forgot about it, and how that could be something to re-examine. Or if you had a really traumatic head injury that certainly did impact your life significantly, either way, this is going to be an interesting podcast of looking at the health of the brain and how we can hone in on things like photobiomodulation, some of the things that he's created to focus in specifically on the brain and the difference that that can make, of course, not only for overall health, but for your sleep in particular. He also goes in deeper on things like HRV in an interesting new way that I think you might really appreciate. I know many of you are either curious about HRV or are actively tracking that, whether it's nocturnal, daytime, or both, and often looking for ways to further up-level this area. And so he's got some really cool things that you can, ways to approach this area that might be a little out of the box. So I think you're going to really enjoy it. But first, a little bit about Dr. Joe. So he is dedicated to helping people live a more fulfilling life. His passion is to help people by teaching them how they can create neuroregeneration and healing in their own lives. He is the founder and president of the nonprofit organization. He is in his 32 years of clinical experience, has come to understand that very low quality of life that people are affected by are neurodegenerative diseases experience, and that their disability touches every aspect of their existence, personal, social, and family. He has made it his life's work to help end the suffering, initiate their recovery, and restore their humanity. Some of his backgrounds, you know, you can find him all over the place, featured on Fox News, NBC, CBS. He has been at the forefront of a number of different papers on this topic of health and well-being, published and presented over 32 to be specific, specific papers around the globe. He's lectured to medical groups across Europe and North and South America. He is a collaborator with scientific experts worldwide. I mean, the list is on and on of lots of accomplishments that he has made in the world of health. And so we will include that bio in our podcast show notes. But if you have any other questions, don't hesitate to ask. And so without further ado, let's jump into the meat of it. Now, before we get into the podcast, I do want to take a quick minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, or as I like to call it, a therapist in your pocket. It's the exact app that I used when I was going through my really challenging period of insomnia while traveling overseas. And the ability to maintain a consistent therapist in real life was just really not an option for me since we were jumping around from country to country. So the ability to, with using my phone, have video calls weekly with my therapist, I was paired with I connected with a great therapist right off the bat, but I do know other people who have been able to kind of shop around with some of the therapists on that app until they find a great fit for them. And in between those calls, one of the things that I found was really helpful is that you can also send voice notes, text messages, images in between that, you know, longer weekly video call, so that you do have this really very real ongoing connection and support that I certainly, at least in my experience, hadn't felt with real life therapist that I had used in the past. And also the pricing structure is much more competitive than a lot of the real life therapists that you can come into contact with. So I found it to be a lot of benefits. I recommend it to a lot of people that are just kind of going through struggles in their life or just simply want to be able to up level and bring in that level of reflection and awareness into their life about what's both working and not working. And you can certainly cancel at any time. And for our sleepy community, the BetterHelp company has hooked us up with 10% off. If you go to betterhelp.com/sleep-is-a-skill, again, betterhelp.com/sleep-is-a-skill. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. My guest today is known affectionately as Dr. Joe. And Dr. Joe, I am so grateful that you took the time to be here today from beautiful Costa Rica.
Thank you, Molly. It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure.
Awesome. I know we put this in our calendar a while back, so I'm excited that the day is finally here. We've had lots of back and forth. I felt that you've been quite the pioneer on a number of topics that are near and dear to me. Certainly sleep, red light therapy, photobiomodulation, kind of transcranial work. And so you're going to get into helping us all understand in a deeper sense what all of these things are about and more. I know we got more to discuss too. So I'm going to jump right in and I would love to turn the table to you and have you share a bit of how did you get into this line of work? How are you so mission-driven and passionate about this topic of sleep and health in general?
Well, I mean, what I found when I was coaching people is they would come in and, you know, my practice is a client-based, taking care of people with mild cognitive impairment or dementia and Alzheimer's. And what I realized was that taking care of Alzheimer's people is that the caregiver needs as much care as the patient. You know, they say Alzheimer's is a terminal disease and sometimes the patient dies, but a lot of times the caregiver is suffering. So I realized that they needed sleep. And then when you would ask the patient with mild cognitive impairment, like, well, how did you sleep? I sleep great. And I was like, I can't go by that. So we needed the biodata, we needed the sleep, you know, information from these people, and then we'd have to figure out a way to get them better, you know, to help these sleep problems get better. That was one of the main things that we knew. We had to implement, you know, sleep data and let people really in general know that their quality of life is going down if they don't sleep and they have to take responsibility for their own health. You know, we talk about self-care and sovereignty, and that's kind of my personal thing, self-care and sovereignty, but you need it. Do you have good brain? You need good sleep.
Absolutely. Yes. So you've had a real focus on the brain in particular for as kind of a genesis for great health. So I'm excited for you to kind of walk us through some of those ways that, so say, if we know that we have either concerns from a maybe genetic perspective, neurodegenerative disorders, or we have a history of some traumatic brain injury. I know we were chatting beforehand that for myself, I was in a really bad car accident when I was 17, went through the sunroof, car fell on top of me, airlifted, I have metal in me from it, you know. And so from that place that we were discussing, that there can be real, actual, measurable fallout of things like that, and then can lead into some of those difficulties with sleep. So from that place, if you can help us understand, how do we begin to make a difference with this area? I know it's a big topic.
Well, that's a big chunk right there. So yes, let's just say, when I got my bio tracker that I use, and I use several of them now, but I realized, one, my numbers weren't looking too good. And I said, well, you know, you're a scientist. You should be able to figure this out. How come my numbers aren't looking too good? Meaning my HRV was low and my sleep was all messed up. And I, you know, so I was like, it's an eye opener. So you can either shake the thing and say, this device doesn't work, or you can say, this device doesn't work. Mm. And so I said, I got my master's degree in clinical research doing test, retest reliability of different instruments. So I could say, even if there's a lot of variable in the machine that's measuring it, it's giving us some signal. So that was one thing. And what I tended to realize is that the people who have a sleep problem, they don't really have a sleep problem. They got a brain problem in one sense. And you talked about it a lot. And I said, geez, we have a young girl. She's bright. She's intelligent. She's active. She's exercises, but she had insomnia. I said, so many of these people don't have a clue that a traumatic brain injury is the basis for many of the low HRVs that won't recover and the sleep problems that won't recover. You know, when you think about 50% to 70% of people with TBI in 21 studies have insomnia. 50% have difficulty maintaining sleep. 49% have poor sleep efficiency, early morning awakening, and nightmares, just as a little thing. So they're missing out on this because you can't actually, like we said, you can't make yourself go to sleep, right? And you can't make your brain better just by what? Drinking green juice?
No, yeah, exactly.
It's a skill. You need to be able to do this. And what we found was that using these new devices, which not too many people even have them, not too many people utilize them. So I'm using them on me and I'm like, hey, look at this. You got a 60-year-old scientist, right? That's not putting in, you know, huge amounts of strain. And my HRV is like 166, you know, 250 percentile of everybody that's using this device. I was like, hey, I think I figured this out. And they're like, no, you didn't. You didn't know. You don't know what you're talking about. This is impossible. I was like, okay, all right. So I had, you know, the science is behind me that when you have a traumatic brain injury and, you know, not, you know, 80 to 90% of them will get better, but the 10% that don't get better, that's 10% every year that are just hanging around. And, you know, if you see people, it's real simple. It's hard for people to get it through their memory.
Yeah,
that they had a traumatic brain injury. And I said, well, did you ever get the wind knocked out of you? Yeah. Oh, did you ever get a headache after you were done? Yeah. Did you ever have light sensitivity? Yeah. So remember, it doesn't have to be loss of consciousness. And that's why it's you're going to have, think of it this way. When you're sleeping, you're kind of, nobody really knows what's happening. You know, you're asleep, you're unconscious. So all that thing is the same thing with a traumatic brain injury. You go from a little bit of boo-boo to a big boo-boo to being unconscious or in a coma. But if you have a scar on the outside, you have a scar on the inside. And that sometimes helps people. I look at them and I said, do you ever have a traumatic brain injury? No. And I'm looking at this, you know, scar on their head. And I'm like, well, how about this? And then they will recall it. So this inflammation and this brain damage just starts in that part. If you're not resuscitating this brain, you're going to have a very, very difficult time in accomplishing your sleep goals or your HRV goals and everything like that, right?
Absolutely.
I take care of like extreme ultra endurance athletes and, you know, they should have low, everything's good about them, but their heart rate variability is in the toilet and their sleep scales are all messed up. And you're like, okay, extreme athlete, how about this? How about this? Did you ever have a concussion? Oh yeah. Okay. Well, let's start treating the brain and everything goes up.
Yes. Okay. So this is exciting because so many people that will reach out to sleep as a skill, one, it's sleep and HRV will often come into the conversation very, very quickly and frustration about how to raise that HRV. We often hear, you know, the same old things that will come, cardio, running, lower your stress, all those sort of things. And yet I would love to go deeper on, because it sounded like when you first began and you were looking at those measurements, your HRV wasn't as stellar and then you've gotten it to this great level. So fill us in on in between there. What did that look like? What did you do?
So we have designed and brought together a suite of devices for transcranial photobiomodulation. So if people don't know what that is, it's sort of like it's putting light on the head through the brain, through the skull. So this is a lot of power. This will really increase your brain power. It helps with turning on the brain for the mild cognitive impairment people. Because the real reality of it is, if you had a traumatic brain injury, you have like a 10 times more likelihood to get cognitive decline later in life because it actually never got better. Your brain never got better. So you're trying to drive the car with the tires are flat, the engine's gummed up. You're trying to create more brain power and more cognition and you're just getting more and more clogged up. So they don't really get there. So that's sort of the scenario. And so the reality of it is I am a TBI survivor, just like just about everybody else.
Sure.
And remember when I said, you know, you get the wind knocked out of you. Think about that. So when you're in a SWAT team or you're in the army and there's a blast, right? And the blast concussion hits you. There's not shrapnel that breaks through your head. You know, you don't bang your head, but the force is transmitted through the fluid of your body and creates this damage. Even a simple car accident, even when you don't hit anything, the acceleration of your brain, you know, the jello as you accelerate and decelerate, tears and destroys neurons that deepen inside your brain. So 60 years old, I played 12 years of contact sport, you know what I mean? Two brothers, yeah. A lot of
fill
stuff.
Fill in the blanks, yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I realized that my sleep disorders, which it really didn't even, you know, realize that back in the day, loud snoring, waking up early and thinking, I'm full of power. But I started with the Zio tracker back in the 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, I love that thing. The thing is about all these trackers is if you're curious and you're competitive, you want to beat the score, right?
Right.
So that's what you try to do is increase that thing. And that was a great company because it gave you real EEG off your brain.
Yeah.
And you're doing ahead of its time, that company.
Yeah.
Right. But I never got, you know, the results that I wanted. So
yes.
If you think about it, you have traumatic brain injury, sleep apnea goes up, even in youth, even in young kids.
Yeah.
And that's going to reduce the oxygenation to your brain power is going to go down. So you're in a downward cycle. And I know that when we talked before, you have a lot of, you know, menopausal women and everything like that. And, you know, as soon as there's a hormone change, your brain function starts to dive. And a real easy scenario is let's increase the circulation to the brain. Let's increase the mitochondrial activity of that brain. Let's get this stuff going and turn the lights back on, basically. I mean, I don't mean to be a pun, but.
Yeah, no, literally, that is exactly right. So for you, you start seeing this and you're inspired to start taking new action because, all right, your numbers aren't where you want them to be. And then did it become like a high dosing? Was this a daily practice? What does this look like for us?
Well, you're so intelligent. You pick out the tough questions immediately. And when we talk about dose, okay, so there's light in general, and there's your circadian rhythms that we need to have. That's a dose.
Yeah.
And people aren't getting that. And then people are getting, say, like the light panels, you know, that like put red light. And is that a dose? I think that really what happens when you have red light, you're reducing the garbage light, but you're not really increasing the light absorption of your tissues. Because really, in order to have the red and infrared light, okay, infrared light penetrates more. You've got to have it right against you. Because that if here, you don't have, for an LED, you don't have much penetration into the tissue. Here, you have more. When it presses against there, it goes in more. So that's really what we're talking about is penetration is the first thing that influences dose.
Okay.
The type of wavelength that you use, okay, the power of the LED or the laser that you're using, right? How much power that thing's putting out, and then actually how close it is to the tissues. Now, one of the things that we do is actually on another group, we're actually, because that's really how you get dose, we're actually modeling how different light gets into the brain and how much gets in there, because every different device is going to have a different thing. So this is
through the nose,
intranasal. So the thing is that this does two things. The red light is going to oxygenate the blood, which is going to clean the blood, make it flow better, which is important for our circulation, for getting the blood where it needs to go easily, because the blood tends to get sticky. All these things happen and the blood will get sticky. And if you put the red and infrared, this is dual red light, if you can see it.
Right. We'll have to show a clip of this so you can see the visual.
The red light is more for the blood tissue. And every 5 minutes, 5 liters of blood pass through your nose. So you're kind of powering up all that blood and it increases the flow, blood flow. The infrared light has the ability to pass, perhaps because there's no restrictions, into the prefrontal cortex. Ventral medial prefrontal cortex. Now, why is that important? Because impact injuries like this hurt the front of your brain.
Yeah.
And if you happen to do the neurobiology of heart rate variability, one of the places that the cortical areas or the brain areas work is from the ventral medial prefrontal cortex right here. So my studies showed that this intranasal device will increase the oxygen consumption and the blood flow to the ventral medial prefrontal cortex. That's important because that's really what's sending the signals down into your brainstem to kind of power this whole system up. And you're probably not powering the system up if you have hypofunctioning here. So this is the whole circle, okay? So if you hurt the brain, you hurt the heart rate variability, which reduces the cardiovascular function of the cerebral cortex. And that sort of is a downward cycle. Back and forth. Remember, you have a traumatic brain injury, you really can't think too much better. So it would be smart to not allow a lot of stuff to come in to activate your brain. So it's kind of a fail-safe. You follow where I'm going with this? That it's a downward spiral of you can't sleep, you can't recover, your brain is not running your heart rate variability in the way that it could, the most optimized way. And you start to have this downward spiral of cognitive dysfunction, emotional dysregulation, sleep disorders, and you just basically are not what you should be. You're not pre-injury level, if you follow me.
So then maybe you can help us understand too, some of these panels, because I like how you broke down some of these red light options that are out on the market right now. They will, one, you're making the great point of the proximity to the importance of having that close to you, which not everyone is doing. But then also for the brain in particular, some of them will actually say that you shouldn't use them on the head. Do you know of why that would be or why people have these call outs around that when it sounds like there's so much importance to doing that?
I think that's a great question. But you know, when you do the actual research and talk to the actual people, remember, sure, I've been doing neural rehabilitation with light therapy for almost 20 years. I'd started doing a lot of neuropathy work, generating nerves. And we realized that, you know, it's only one nervous system. So if you got numb feet, you got numb brain. And we really couldn't turn, I really didn't have the confidence to turn this light pads around and put it up on the head. There wasn't really enough research and we were getting in trouble taking care of neuropathy, but we actually grew back the nerves and the feet. So I was like, hey, if the feet get more nerves growing based on skin punch biopsies, you can actually count the nerves that are coming back. If their pain goes down, if their balance improves, then what are we doing? We're actually changing the nervous system. So it wasn't until even around 2017 that there was enough evidence that says, hey, put the light on the head. We were telling people to do it, you know, in quiet. We can't say, hey, take this on your head. Now I can drive the car. I mean, that's what they would tell us. But there really wasn't enough. I couldn't really put it out there to say, oh yeah, brain, even though it was a brain guy. I just really wasn't enough evidence for me to say, yeah, this is going to work. And you know what? There's evidence now, but we don't have a formula. We don't have a protocol at this point. Me and a bunch of other researchers are working on that. But
yes,
that's the scenario. That's the scenario.
That's amazing. Yeah, I remember, I'm just pulling up one of our first, because we've been communicating on social media for quite some time. And I remember way back when, I remember seeing some of your work even back in, it looks like, I think like 2018 or 19, because I just had never seen anyone doing what you were doing. So it's really been so cool to follow what you're creating, really trailblazing. So a couple things, maybe we can just further, I know we've already been getting in the weeds on some of these topics, but I know you mentioned beforehand the glymphatic pump, you know, and we speak about this at different points on the podcast and in our newsletter and what have you, but I liked how you worded it, glymphatic pump. I haven't heard as many people describe it like that. And I think it's worth hearing from your take on a little bit of a rundown of why that's important for people that aren't as familiar with that and how that relates to this whole conversation.
So let's just say the garden variety traumatic brain injury. So yes. So you had a couple of them and everything like that. Well, no matter what happens in your brain, toxins, you know, the trauma, you know, ruminating about thoughts can sort of glog up this brain. And the glymphatic pump, you need these deep cycles and these big shifts in your sleep wave cycles to work that glymphatic pump. Now, the first time I heard about glymphatic pump was actually the best description. So the guy said, so you have the trash collectors that go in Manhattan, right? And they have to race around and collect all this garbage every night. What would happen, he said, if the buildings shrunk in the middle of the night so that the streets would get bigger so that the garbage trucks could whip around a lot quicker? And he says, that's basically what happens when you have it in your glymphatic system. And people didn't really even know that that existed back then. I mean, it was like the first guy. So what happens is in the deep sleep stage, your brain slows down. So it doesn't have a high metabolic calling. It's like, hey, we're cool. Now do your work. So there may be some the astroglial cells and all the stuff start working like crazy, and you have this pressure change in the brain, and zoom, you're sort of like a power wash in that brain. If you don't get that stuff out, you really can't put anything in. How can you put a good nutrition in? How can you put good thoughts in? How can you change this brain if it's full of gunk? Can't do it. So really what my coaching and one of the things that we, you know, teach people about is how to increase the circulation just before you go to sleep so that you have all fluid that you need up there. So when you get going, you're going to have a good, better flush. That's really pretty insightful, because that's really where it's going to start. You can't really put the nutrition in there. You can't really do all this stuff quickly and easily. And that's why the research with light therapy or photobiomodulation, especially transcranial photobiomodulation, and my own research is rapid reversal of dementia. Okay. Yeah. So from demented to normal in 28 days without a whole lot of other stuff, just getting the system online. Remember, things that people don't really understand is that photobiomodulation in general and transcranials and specifically drives the parasympathetic nervous system. It is something very easy to do to turn up your HRV. And that's really not well recognized. So we know that if you do transcranial photobiomodulation or any kind of your depression symptoms go down, anxiety goes down, you know, your sleep is going to get better. Deep sleep is going to get better. Things like that really haven't come to light. We know that if you put the light on the people, you know, to transcranial light or lasers, most, you know, infrared, red, or a combination of both, which my system does, is that you're going to have a better brain. Your cognition is going to get better. Memory is going to get better. Caregiver stress goes down, all these things. And just as a note, we found that the smell was restored. One of the only times that happened. And when you look at the COVID long haulers, the thing that's going to knock you down is the cognitive decline. It's a blood disorder. It's a neurologic disorder. It's an inflammation disorder. And that's why photobiomodulation, really the good stuff, is so helpful in COVID, you know, prevention and restoration, just to let you know, because we're going to need this stuff.
Yeah.
To fix all the gunk that we've piled up inside our brain when we get COVID.
Absolutely. Okay. So you made so many good points in there. Just to pluck out a couple, I like what you said too about the goal of increasing that circulation before bed, because it will get a lot of people asking, all right, red light, photobiomodulation, what do I do for timing? So is part of your protocol then to, and certainly I'm sure at different points throughout the day is always presumably beneficial. And yet do you have people anchor that as a nightly routine before bed?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that buy gadgets, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that take seminars.
Yeah.
And they're like a seminar junkie, or I'm like a gadget junkie, and I like you the way you are. I mean, you get a lot of gadgets too, but you say you want to test them. But I'm an implementation junkie.
So yeah.
I'm very disciplined and I do a lot of stuff in my routine. But I find that if you can, one of the things that people talk about, Molly, I think it's like, oh, you can't make yourself go to sleep. But you can train your nervous system to be calm. You can train your nervous system to be grateful. And remember, my HRV score, I call it your happiness score, your joy score. So yes. I'm about having a fulfilling life and a good brain and being a good person, have good relationships. And all that is really connected to your HRV. So remember, you lose a lot of your humanity when your brain and the prefrontal cortex and stuff starts to go down. You're not nice to be around. You know, and that's really ultimately what it is. So if you can't make yourself go to sleep, what do people do? They crash. And I try to tell them, you don't have the skill yet, thanks to Molly, talking it's a skill. You have to build the landing in for these people. So you have to build that wind down for them. And so what do? They just crash. I said, that's what we don't want to do. We just don't want you to crash, because it's not going to work. You need to land. So we build their routine so they can land to sleep, softly go to the nether world, if you will. Sweet sleep. I'll give you a tip. I'll give everybody a tip. Smile as much as you can before you fall asleep.
I like that one. That's actually something that I have not heard people say, and so simple yet so effective, and something that you can generate on a nightly basis and make that a habit. I love that. And that lands nicely with what you spoke about with gratitude. That's a big practice for myself and my fiance before bed. It's such a great thing to pull in. So I love that you said that. And your joy score. Yes.
Get yourself calm, make yourself safe, all those things that you talked about, all the things that people need to do. And, you know, it's a long process. So yes, you want to have a landing strip. So we want them, you know, why was it important to do it late at night? No, why did this help is basically how I unraveled it. And I realized that I don't just have TBI. Yeah, I have CTE. I mean, I have the real one, the bad one. And that's why it was hard. You know, it's a hard life when your brain don't work.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm actually working hard on for my TBI and stuff. And it's working, you know, it's working on brain scans. It's working on, you know, stuff that we're able to diagnose or show this is a bad brain. This is a good brain. I'm getting better, you know, and clients are getting better. You know,
yeah.
I went from a person who couldn't remember names of people, couldn't remember names when I'm reading a book, you know, not doing too good on, you know, some levels. And then, you know, I had the QEEG and the guy said, you know, you have a 95% probability you had a traumatic brain injury and it's right there. Mm. So, I mean, it's no joke, but yeah. You know, since I've been doing the training, everybody said, wow, you got a great memory. And like, I'm pretty sure I'm ambidextrous now.
Amazing. All right. So that neuropathy topic, they're building all kinds of new neural pathways. Amazing. Quick question about your knowledge in the area of the brain and the lymphatic pump. And thank you for walking through that. Do you subscribe to any other call-its? You know, some people will talk about lifting the back of the bed up to further support that drainage function, pillows, any or certain side sleeping versus back sleeping. Any call-outs there?
I think you're going to have a good point there. So I also suffered a different traumatic brain injury in around 2000, 1999. I had a stroke, pretty common. Wow. It's actually a pretty common type of stroke.
Sure.
And my vagal function went in the toilet because it's right at the, you know, base of the brain stem. And so I had such erratic heart rates and I had all this stuff. And, you know, they told me, you know, sleep with your bed elevated. You know, and what you're doing right there is you're training the baroreceptors in a different way. They're the ones that read your blood pressure in your neck. So the lightheadedness when you stand up, the bend over and stand up, things don't work right. You know, sweats and you know, it's definitely puts you in a state of sympathetic drive. You just can't regulate yourself. So sleeping with the bed inclined is a good sort of a crutch, you know, basically, because you're trying to give your vagus nerve, your vagal tone based from the baroreceptors in your carotid arteries and probably in your aorta, a little bit different tone. But if you're like me, you're also taking your O2 levels when you sleep.
Mm.
Correlating that with movement and sleep and snoring and everything like that and mouth taping. I mean, I did all that stuff, everything to try to put. So I think it's a crutch. I think it's something that will make changes with people. I mean, I've been doing it since the 2000s, back in the day. But really, if you have a traumatic brain injury, your chances of having sleep apnea go way up. The chances of you getting the proper oxygen to your brain go way down because you're not going to be breathing at night. So I'm doing a whole lot of different changes. And actually, anecdotally, they've shown that if you can put the photobiomodulation pads, you're going to increase the tone of those of your glossopharyngeal muscles, which seems to be part of it, right? So yes, I highly recommend people use a mouth guard.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend that they get a mouth guard in there if they're grinding and, you know, just look at your teeth, you know, if they're wore down or if your dentist says, you know,
evidence
I had a dentist.
Grinding.
He said, you got a chip. This tooth is cracked right here. I said, what do you mean? She could see it. And that's because I wasn't grinding, but because brain circuitry gets messed up when you have a traumatic brain injury, things are spinning out of control. That's where you get this increased tension in the mouth, in the jaw, and in the throat. So you're going to get tense at night, grind, and you're going to close off your airways. So you have to kind of fix that.
Yeah.
So yes, there's crutches that you can use, but if you get in there and actually work on the tone of these muscles, so sleep position is important. But I couldn't understand why I'm laying on my back and the thing's going off your SpO2 is going down, down, down. Like it's my throat. It's my, I can't relax. I'm given different positions and things like that. Many things affect it, but let's paint with a broad brush. As I tell people, let's just see if we get more brain power, more blood to the brain, more mitochondrial activity in the brain. Let's see if we can get this thing flowing, get the blood flowing a little bit better, more freely, and see what that does for you. And then pick it apart. No, that's what we do with the coaching. It's personalized.
Absolutely. I love that. And bringing your knowledge and years of training into that kind of personalized perspective for that bio-individuality is really important. Okay. So it's clear that you have lots of things to share in so many of these areas that can help make a difference, certainly with our sleep and our health in general. So what people have added on as a question is they want to know more about what the guests are doing that have such knowledge in this area. So we want to ask you a couple questions around your own personal sleep habits. You sound just like me, have been playing with different ways of running things for your sleep. So I'm sure this evolves, but for right now, first question is, what is your nightly sleep routine right now?
So I have a series of about 20 HRV hacks, I call them, a lot of them are getting you to your bed at the right time. And I'll send those out to anybody who wants them.
Great.
And, but one of the things is sleep is about your circadian rhythm. So I like to look at the sunset, look at the sky in the evening. And then I make sure I get rid of the garbage light as much as possible. I used to do the candlelight for a while, but you have to learn to do a landing strip. You have to give these people time to wind down. And so one of the things I drink my tea in the evening. I drink that tea. One, it's going to increase the fluid so that you're hydrated enough. So when you do make that push, that lymphatic pump pushes, you're hydrated enough. Because that's one of the main problems of people. They're not hydrated enough and they can't get their push. The other thing that the warm tea does, and you could put all those herbs in there that you like, I have a night, whatever you like, that is a big, helps you calm down. And that you realize if you can't cool, if you can't drop like 1 or 2 degrees, you have trouble falling asleep. So even if you're in a warm place, drinking a hot tea makes you cool down. So that helps you relax, get into that relaxed state. Those are kind of real easy things. And of course, stay off of your phone, have the dimmer, try to do it. I mean, it's nothing really great going on. Blue blockers if you're watching TV, Netflix and chill, some things like that. So I'm not as regimented as I used to be type of thing, because it's your whole body has to learn how to go to sleep. You understand?
Yeah.
Your microbiome wants to go to sleep. Everything wants to go to sleep. Just got to let the body do what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's herbs, there's hacks, there's tons of things. But one of the things that I would like to suggest to people who, and I don't think they're going to really pick this up, is the waking in the middle of the night. The waking in the middle of the night. Remember, there's lots of different things that happen throughout your sleep cycle, and they're all important. But this waking in the middle of the night and you had a dream, you had a sympathetic blast. Of course, you're supposed to have that and you may wake up, but then you start to go through your day and you go through the next day and go through the next day. And one of the things, a super hack that I found, is if you put that light pad, since it's right near the bed, you stick it on your body someplace, because it pushes that parasympathetic system, out you go again. And it's really good for you. It's good if you put it on your tummy. It's good for the microbiome. So you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a community. You're not just Joe behind your eyes. It's everything wants to go to sleep. Your liver wants to take a break. Your intestine, everything wants to do its stuff. So the other thing is you hear that guy, he eats his dinner at 2 p.m.?
Yes.
He eats his dinner at 2 p.m.? That's a little radical. I mean, that guy's strong. Me, I try to get it at sundown.
Yes.
And
yeah.
4 hours of sleep. Because why? Because why? Because blood in your gut does not give you blood for your brain. That's why.
Yes.
You're priming your lymphatic pump by eating earlier. Remember that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have been one of those people, the 2 p.m. stop time on the dinner. But I'll kind of oscillate between the early time restricted feeding and then the circadian rhythm intermittent fasting, which gives it a little bit longer of space. But absolutely, you'll see the difference in the numbers. Of course, managing stressors and not doing it to a point that it's a little much, but it can absolutely make a big difference. And you're so right. So managing, where is that blood going to go? What's going to be happening throughout the course of our night? And then you can also see it in, of course, both you and I are fans of leveraging the workability of some of these wearables. And we'll see the difference in our heart rate numbers, our HRV, our body temperature, our respiratory rate, and beyond. So really great points there. Okay. So, I also like and acknowledge that you, in your nightly sleep routine, there wasn't too much reliance on supplements or what have you. And so, and I'm not saying that, you know, that's not, certainly there's time and a place for certain people to lean into that. And yet I like that so much of that is that behavioral element of things and really just making this more routine for us. So over time, it just becomes automatic. And so the next question is, what is on your quote unquote nightstand or even proverbial nightstand? So like gadgets, supplements, ambiance, apps, any of that?
I'm wired up before I go to bed. So all my, I have my pads, you know, I have my yeah. stuff to do my, do my deal. And I have my process, and it's a good process. You know, it's something that you need to wind down. So I used to like to read, but I realized that, you know, I put my helmet on and read, and put my intranasal on and read and everything like that. But I don't read that in bed anymore. I just do my process and go to bed. So I'll have my earplugs, my mouthpiece, my devices, and my all the things I got to turn on to get my bio data. And, you know, make sure that, that everything's going in the right direction and to do my spot on things. And that's kind of, you're going to need all that other stuff. You're going to need the supplements. You're going to need the everything to kind of restart to get the system sure. back online. And but paint with a broad picture, really just do the big things. And then you're not going to have a great relationship listening to a guy on the radio talk about relationships. It's going to be some general rules, but you better be specific about what you and your, you know, significant other are doing. You know, you pointed that out so well that there's a lot of things that create stress. There's a lot of things that influence your sleep. You know, and the resiliency that you have inside in your heart rate variability and your ability to get up and down and experience these ranges of emotions, that's what we're building. We're building bandwidth with our people. So you're going to need that stuff, but you shouldn't use it as a crutch. You should become better.
Love that. Really well said. Okay. And then, so the last question is, what was your kind of biggest sleep, maybe aha moment or biggest change to your sleep game?
Well, I had an aha moment the other day when I was putting on a, trying out a new chest heart rate monitor, you know, to get my data a little bit clearer.
Sure.
We want accurate data to make accurate yeah. conclusions. And yeah. when I say, listen, I got the you know, I'm in the top 3% of people in my age group of across all users of this stuff. They give like, oh, your device is no good. Or you're this, you know what I mean? A lot of bullying out there in the science, quote unquote. It's supposed to be in these internet bullying. I'm not really down with that. You know, so I'm not, I was like, what, that guy, somebody's questioning my numbers. So I tried out this new heart rate monitor thing and to do it over the night. And I wake up in the morning and my SpO2 is in the toilet. Everything's going down. No, that's terrible. Horrible. I'm supposed to be the guy that fixes this stuff and it's going down. And it was about the afternoon after I got out of my funk when I realized the chest strap was too tight. I couldn't expand my chest during the night, and I was choking myself, you know, like that was an aha moment, you know.
Sometimes we have these goals of improving to next levels, and sometimes it can hinder our results. Yeah, love that. Good. Well, I like the lightness around all that, the experimentation, the kind of N equals one detective work that you've been doing for yourself, but then certainly amplifying that to the many people that you've worked with over the years, and then on those one-on-one relationships. So from that place, I know there's what's likely is out of all this, you've sparked some thoughts for people, certainly some brain activity during all this conversation. And so how can people learn more about what you have, what you're working on? I know you got a book in store coming and certainly different products that you offer that really help handle exactly what we've been speaking about in a thoughtful way. So let us know all the ways to be connected with you.
Well, I'm Instagram. Like to be on Instagram, talk to people there. My_brain_matters, my brain matters. We also, that's a good way to get some questions. ProNeuralight.com is my website where you can look over the information and have a chat there if you want. We have the chat feature. We also have the personalized coaching available to people if they think that this is a lot to handle. And I think that there's also, I'm coming out with my book, which
walks
through a lot of the science of this stuff. It's called My Brain Matters, The Neurometabolic Solution, How to Increase Brain Power for Your Loved Ones and Yourself.
Awesome. Well, I just want to say that I was struck by your passion, even those years back when I'd first seen what you're up to, and continue to love the lens by which you look at these issues for people and really help expose things that people might have missed. And so I'm excited for more. I'm excited to read your book. And thank you so much for taking the time to share all your wisdom with us. This was just really, really thought-provoking and impactful.
Thank you, Molly. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.